Amsterdam, Dublin, up to P.O. Box 900, Los Angeles, California, 90212, and I will fill your prescription with some degree of accuracy, and then I'll send it back to you.
WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now.
Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the broadcast. And Jalene Jordan, welcome back. You had the weekend off last weekend. What's the matter? Why are you looking at me like that? You can't hear me? You can't hear me? You don't think we're broadcasting?
It's still the intro in my ear.
Oh, you've got to do something different. Okay, I can't. There's too many technical problems today. Let me just see if I can do this by hitting that. How's that?
I've got some kind of delay going on.
Yeah, I know.
I could just take my headphones off.
Yeah, why don't you do that for now? Because the mighty Al is making a reappearance here.
He is, and we need him for more than one thing.
Yeah, I wondered what you were looking at me, and I thought, like, do I have Tourette's syndrome?
No, I thought you were messing with my head.
No.
Wow.
Anyways, what I said was, welcome back after your week off.
Yes, thank you.
Yes,
thanks. Good to be back.
Yeah. And I took a little trip as well. And I don't know, maybe it was a big trip, just in a little amount of time. I had to pick up some furniture in Baltimore, so I rented a cargo van. You know,
this is not a eat the rich thing. This is family furniture in
Picked up some family furniture. So I left at 8 a.m. on Thursday morning, and I drove about 9.5 or 10 hours, got to Baltimore, loaded up the furniture, went to sleep, got in the van, and came back here. So it was like 20 hours on the road all by myself, but I thought this was cool. I had, pardon me, brand new Walter Mosley, one of my favorite authors, a detective, writes in 50s and 60s African-American settings in Los Angeles, a terrific writer, probably best known for Devil in the Blue Dress, which was a film with Denzel Washington. Did you ever see that?
I don't think I ever saw
it. It's a terrific film, too. Great book. All of his books have, at least about his hero, if you will, E.Z. Rollins. They all have color in it, so they have Devil in the Blue Dress. And this was Bad, Bad Brawley Brown. So I say, wait a minute, what do you mean that this van does not have a jack that I can jack my CD player into? So I said, okay, what I'm going to do is, I know this probably is not the best thing in the world, but I'll wear headphones.
You did?
Well, I tried, and I could barely hear it, and I gave up after about two CDs. So I spent essentially 18 hours listening to right-wing talk shows, Christian radio, and country music.
Wow. How'd you live through it, Peter?
I don't know. Well, you know what? Either if you're having the time of your life or you're in solitary confinement, time goes by.
That's true.
And I'm back.
Well, we're glad.
And I got to tell you, though, There are some frightening stuff out there. I mean, it's interesting that the vast majority of people are so out of sync with so much of the media. In other words, so much of the media, you know, at best is centrist, like the networks and all that. And then you have this enormous bulk of far right-wing whack job, you know, ordinary right-wing talk radio, Christian talk radio. I mean, I was listening to stuff, and I thought, I can't believe what these people are saying.
And that's what they say about you. And
I know, but 5 years ago, 5 years ago, if I would have heard from somebody like Rush Limbaugh, the head of the Republican Party, I could have said, you know.
What about Newt Gingrich?
Anyway. I said, Rush, you know, you're wrong, and here's why you're wrong. I mean, you just laid out these facts, and I know the opposite set of facts, or the facts, or your analysis of the facts that we both agree on is incorrect. 10 years ago, when he was, you know, piling on, what was the guy's name? Clinton.
yeah.
How soon we forget. You know, same thing. He could have said this and that. I was speechless. I could not answer because the things that they said were so far from reality.
Yeah.
That they are so crazed that, you know, and Barack Obama, it's funny. I mean, he is so within the parameters of traditional American presidents.
True.
Other than the last one.
Right.
You know, other than Bush, who went off the spectrum to the right, that that what all of these people are so insane about is so far beyond me.
Yeah. Well, it's really, I think, more than any time in since I've been alive. I mean, to me, it's I just cannot believe really what they're saying, what they're, you know, the falsities that they're making up. It's disgusting.
Well, during the Clinton era, you had these same right wing forces. Although, you know, they had CB radios and they, you know, you had things like the Michigan Militia and all that, and they were, you know, they were selling out our country to the United Nations and fluoride in our water. And Clinton was a secret stealth member of the communist conspiracy, you know, the communists had, you know, cashed it in.
Just wanted to get laid.
Yeah, exactly. And, but now, with the A, with the internet, well, maybe it's, I don't know which is A and which is B, but certainly with the advent of these far right wing talk shows and also things like Fox Noise, these are enablers that that affirm what people believe. I mean, one of the reasons that people listen to like our show or the little bit of liberal talk radio that's out there, and I heard none, by the way. I looked for it and looked for it. I drove all through Ohio. I drove all through Pennsylvania. I drove through Maryland.
Not a one.
And I thought, I mean, these are states that went for Obama.
Right.
Wouldn't you think some broadcaster would say, well, we got to get, you know, Tom Hartman on. We got to get Mike Malloy on. We have to get Ed Schultz on. We got to get one of these guys. So I'm like,
they're afraid.
And I keep going, you know, they got this, what is it, scanner?
Seek or scan.
Seek,
right?
Yeah, seek. And I'm going, and I would sit there, you know, like for an hour. You know, I didn't have anything to do except drive.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, nothing to listen to. And
you're obsessed over the state of the world.
Well, yeah.
You were doing it anyway.
No, I was trying to, like, just be there. I was trying to, like, really zen out.
In the moment.
Yeah. Which was pretty awful, just driving down that Pennsylvania Turnpike.
Wow.
Watching that gas gauge drop.
Oh, I can only imagine what a cargo van.
I think I spent about $150 in gas.
Gas total?
Total.
Well, that doesn't seem bad.
$75 a day rental.
Right.
So then we're up to $300 and about $50 in tolls.
You elitist, Peter.
$350. Why is that an elitist?
I'm just kidding.
I wanted to fly there. That would have been a little more elitist.
Right.
But I couldn't get a drop off. You get one-way van. I couldn't get a one-way van.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The airfare on Southwest was $100 to go to you had to go to Baltimore. It was cheaper, in other words, to fly than it was to drive.
Right, but you had to bring your things back.
I had to bring my things.
I'm sorry you had to go through right-wing hell, but
yeah.
You know what? We're all in it, and it's every day.
Yeah, but
it's
why?
Everywhere.
Why? I mean, over 60% of Americans approve of Barack Obama. And I don't know, if someone said to me, do you approve of Barack Obama? I'm not even sure what I would say. I mean,
true.
Yes or no answer, it's pretty tough.
That's real tough.
I mean, there are so many aspects that of these these Bush policies that have fortunately have been undone that he gets a, you know, really positive marks for, because he was just giving the store away to the corporations and the Christian right and all that.
Yeah, and he started like right out of the
box,
at the gate.
Yeah, right. And so that's real good. And so a lot of people are, you know, angry about the stimulus package and what have you.
His firing of Rick Wagner.
Who's Rick Wagner?
Was the head of
the GM. How soon we forget? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I don't know why.
I think there's a lot of people who are really upset about that, and you know, I can't remember some of the names that they are now calling GM, but it all has to do with, you know, being owned by the government.
Oh, yeah. There's a T-shirt on this is available. It's GM, and it's got a hammer and sickle for the G.
Oh, really?
I'm going to have a tough night, man. This cold will not go
away. I'm here for you, Peter.
Anyway.
If I could wear headphones, it'd be even better.
Al, where are you, buddy? We need you.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, he can hear us. He's rushing in. I can hear. Al, all right.
Yay!
Yeah. So first off, you got to get the delay out of her headphones, which, watch this, with one, isn't
oh,
he?
Oh, let's see.
This guy, is he? Did he do it?
He did.
He did. The guy is amazing.
Thank you, Al.
Yeah. He's been doing it for, what, 30, 35 years?
No, not so much. I mean, he's been doing it for the least amount of time in this room, but yes, he probably knows more about it, board, than we do.
Hey, by the way, this is a phone-in talk show. So you can reach us at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And if you are bashful, or if you find the lines filled, which they are not right now, you can go to 313-298. I'm trying to watch what he's doing to learn. You can go to calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
Peter?
Yeah.
I had a friend on Facebook say, "What's the show about tonight, Julian?" And I said, "Oh, the usual, sex, drugs, and Sarah Palin."
Yeah, Sarah Palin. She's in the news again.
Yeah.
That does. But, you know, I mean, how do these... Oh, my, he fixed it.
Wow.
How does he do it?
He's a miracle. Give this boy a raise.
Yes. Al, by the way, the reason he's not on the show anymore is because he is a full-time Riff DJ.
I know.
He does the overnights.
Which we're very happy for you.
Yeah.
But we do miss
selfishly,
you.
I wish he was back here.
Yeah.
I'm not on the clock right now, though, guys.
Yeah. He's not here. So, all right, see you later.
Al, you are the most.
You should see if you can get a dial tone up there. Make sure it's working.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I'm sure we can. I can just tell by looking at the board that we can. If I can make now, I can't even make the mouse work. So let's see.
There it is.
Oh, we got up. Yep.
Yay,
okay.
You can call.
You rock.
Thank you so much.
313-298.
We owe you lunch. 313-298-WRIF.
All right. One of the things that, one of the things I keep, that these righties, I mean, this is a classic thing of squeaky wheel getting the grease. I mean, why are these people getting any play whatsoever? They are far off the edge. I mean, the so-called mainstream of the conservatives and the rightists, they're no different than the black helicopter dudes from 15 years ago. I mean, they're a big whack job because Barack Obama, I mean, what they're really forced to come up with are all these crazy things that he's actually going to turn this into a socialist country.
That he's a Muslim. They're still on that one.
That he's not a citizen. I mean, this is all just so 100% totally nuts. What about his policies? Now, I got some objections there, but that's another thing. One of the things they were really on about is somebody who probably took Bill O'Reilly or Glenn Beck's speech to heart, shot and assassinated this doctor that provided third-term abortions out in Wichita, Kansas,
Brett Tillman.
Yeah, yeah.
And now there is another one who is stepping up to perform these.
Yeah, this legal procedure.
I can't believe he said it in public. I mean, oof.
Yeah. He wears a bulletproof vest all the time. The right wing is the home of violence. And you can tell that because I think I've told this story before. There is this website that, and I think it's been taken down because of a lawsuit, that this anti-abortion site would have these photographs of abortion doctors, have gun sights over their faces, list where they live, their telephone numbers.
That's just terrible.
Where their children went to school and what have you. And then when finally someone acted on their admonitions and assassinated one of these doctors carrying out a legal procedure, they would have, you know, a cross, not a cross, but an X out of it. And so he said, "I don't know, what are these people afraid of? Here's my home address. Here's my license plate." Oh, they'd put the license plates as well. Because he knew that the people that support reproductive rights in women, that want to leave it up to women to make the choice, aren't going to go out and kill anybody.
Yeah.
But it's these whack jobs that somehow get obsessed with these are men who are concerned that women are doing what women have always done from the beginning of time, which is to induce, or in the case here, have induce abortion themselves, or
Right.
Go to a doctor and have it done.
They probably think burkas are really cool, too.
Yeah, yeah. But one of the things that these right-wing Boviators are on about was that no one was saying anything about the fact that this Muslim convert assassinated a U.S. Army recruiter in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Ooh.
Well, it didn't get as big a play, I have to say. But I don't know what whose fault it was. It was covered extensively on CNN. I know that. It was the story of it on ABC News. So, I mean, it was covered. But there was a lot more. I mean, this was the act of a lone nut, someone who had, an American who had converted to Islam and said he was doing it because of U.S. military operations against Muslim nations in Iraq and Somalia. And Afghanistan. Pardon me. Am I going to subject you to that all night? I'm sorry, folks.
I don't know when it is we're going to get to the Holocaust Museum, but there's another.
Yeah, there's another guy. This is what these programs on Fox Noise, this is what the right-wing talk shows are engendering. The vast majority, 99.9% of people that listen to that and believe it and are angry at Barack Obama are not going to go out and do that. But there's
true.
This ragged edge. And these are the people that get tipped over because essentially they get official permission. but there's something that connects all these people. The Muslim convert who assassinated the recruiter, the what do you call it guy, the Holocaust Museum guy, and the Tiller assassin and
Tillman,
all that.
Right.
Tillman assassin and all that. They are these right-wing religious nuts. And they act as God is on their side.
As well, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the Muslim convert was a black guy, and you know,
right, right.
Yeah, but he. So that's what it's all about. It's all these right wingers. A caller in Delaware wanted to say hello from Delaware.
Lovely.
I didn't go through Delaware. I went through Maryland. So it's Paul Krugman in his column calls it the Big Hate, and
it reminded me of 1984. The title. What was the 3 minute hate?
Yeah. He says. Whatever dividing line there was between mainstream conservatism and the black helicopter crowd seems to have been virtually erased. So, and it says, lone wolf terrorists are harder to stop. Because it's not, I don't think there's any, you know, right-wing groups that are, or who knows? Remember there were those skinheads that were preparing, that were coming into, was it Denver, where Barack Obama was with weapons?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Chip Burlett, senior analyst with Political Research Research Associates in Somerville, Massachusetts, says the number of angry white men in America is getting larger.
Yeah, I heard something, a long thing about this the other day on a talk show. And really, there is so much more hatred because anyone who was a racist before is now just in a frenzy.
Now, there is a lot of reason for men and women to be angry about what's going on. But none of it should be racially identified.
Right.
I mean, it has to do with the people that ruined everything. The people, you know, there is, where is this? Somebody wrote me. God, sorry. Somebody wrote me and said, why do you blame the rich for everything?
Yeah, you don't blame the rich for everything, mate.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
I do, too.
You don't blame for, okay.
What don't I blame?
Well, I mean...
I don't blame bad weather.
You know.
In a way they have, but I don't want to even get into that. Listen, let me finish this
okay.
thought. You always accuse me of not finishing my thoughts. I'm trying here.
Accuse?
Yeah. So you remind me, and you keep me on track.
Right.
Thank you, Jalene Jordan. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan with you. Well, now I've totally... What was my train of thought?
The rich.
Oh, the rich, yeah. So he said, you're blaming everything on the rich. I said, I wrote him back, and I actually sent a copy to you.
Yeah,
too.
I just read it.
And I said, what is it in front of you?
I can pull it up here.
Yeah,
real
because.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Kind of quick.
And
here we go.
Yeah.
Hi, Pete and Julie.
Well, don't read that. That's too long.
Well, I'm just trying. You know how my computer goes at warp speed. Let's see.
I will summarize if you.
He says he's been listening on and off for years.
It's too long.
But
this is my response.
Lately, it's been because sometimes he can't listen to us blame the rich for everything. He agrees that some of them are despicable people, but also that mostly the people like the Waltons that didn't earn their money,
well,
something like that.
Yeah, well, he sounds like he's agreeing partly. But what do I say?
And you say, won't you at least give us the latest one?
That is, the rich are responsible for this current mess.
If it wasn't the rich who screwed up the economy, who was it? Please don't say all of us.
Yeah. So there's room for anger, and there's righteous anger about what's happening to us. We just went off to our jobs every single day. We consumed like crazy because that's what we were urged to do. we maxed out on our credit cards because we were told it was okay. And we bought houses.
Here's this amazing loan.
Way overvalued,
right?
Because we were told, they'll keep going up and up and up, and our little $30,000 home will soon be worth $1 million. So you could say, everybody shouldn't have bought that. Well, when millions and millions and millions of people bought into the stupidity that was coming down from on high, it's a social phenomenon. And sure, a few people, I don't want to name any names particularly because it would involve bragging, don't buy that. Those are the exception. In fact, the exception proves the rule. Most people bought into the la la land of this endlessly expanding economy, and when it finally crashed down, it wasn't with anything that that we individually did. In fact, most of us didn't max out on our credit card. Most of us didn't buy houses that we couldn't afford. Most of us just trotted off to work every day, or we ran our business and tried to do the best we could. So there's room for anger, but what happens? There's this psychoanalytic little aspect that there's the people that turn out to be the angriest don't have the guts to confront the masters, so that they start looking for, it's those colored people, it's the immigrants, it's the Jews. I mean, they used to say it was the Catholics, because it was all being run from Rome and all that. I don't know if anybody's still on about that. I hope not. And they have to make up these insane theories to buttress their anger. Because taking it into a real direction means that they're going to have to involve themselves with what the rich have been involved in forever. That is class warfare. Stripping us of as much wealth as they can. And we had to fight like hell to get decent wages and benefits and what have you. And it took 150 years. Now they're just ripping that all off of us again. They've always practiced class warfare against the classes below them, the middle class and the working class. And, of course, there's this bulk of poor, and screw them completely. So the unwillingness to confront the powers that be is then the anger gets redirected, gets diverted into these insane theories that will go nowhere. I mean, wind up like with fascism or something like that, because eventually you want everybody you don't like put in camps or kicked out of the country or suppressed or whatever.
Sounds horrible. What?
Yeah, I don't know. Let me see if there's anything more. Just one quick thing. I mean, she's just too much. Oh, well, this is nice, though. Miss California, Carrie Prejean, lost her crown.
Oh, yes, that poor girl.
Yeah, so
that poor little homophobe.
Less than a month after being told by Donald Trump that she can keep her Miss California crown, Carrie Prejean was fired on Wednesday.
I caught that one before you. And
you did.
I squealed with joy.
Now the latest flap is Sarah Palin back again.
Oh, boy.
Everybody knows somebody like this in their life. Unfortunately, sometimes it's family, sometimes it's neighbors on the block, sometimes it's even friends that are always involved in some hassle, right?
Yeah.
They are never hassle-free. They've always got something going on. And now Sarah Palin is calling for an uprising against David Letterman because he made a joke about her daughter.
And you know what? I watched the next night when he came to defend himself. And she thought he was talking about her 14-year-old daughter and getting knocked up by Alex Rodriguez. That was the joke he made. And he wasn't. He was talking about Bristol, who did get knocked up before she was 18 and did have the baby.
Well, either way.
Out of wedlock.
Apparently, there's been some even liberal groups that said that he made inappropriate remarks. And actually, he said it was in poor taste.
You know what? I could care less.
It's called television.
It is. It's called entertainment, and it's called free speech, and I loved every minute of it.
But you know what? When you make your children into political props,
they're fair game.
She absolutely did. Yeah.
The entire family.
Yeah, they're all these props. If you think about the Republican National Convention in Minneapolis, if you think about Bristol now promoting abstinence.
Yeah. We don't even know what that word is.
Yes.
What is that?
So, and they invited, Letterman invited Todd and Sarah on his show. And apparently a spokeswoman said, the Palins have no intention of providing a ratings boost for David Letterman by appearing on his show. Plus, it would be wise to keep Willow away from David Letterman.
like he's a pedophile.
Well,
now or
I know. I mean, that's...
These people are just out of their gourds.
But apparently, according to some television writers, like David Bowder of the Associated Press, he said this could be like Letterman's Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant was on. Remember, he got busted with a prostitute?
With the tranny.
It was a tranny?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Little did he know. Maybe
I mean, from afar and with, like, serious, you know, whiskey goggles, she might have looked pretty good.
Whiskey goggles, a little bit. But Hugh Grant was on the Jay Leno show in 1995.
I watched it. I remember the whole thing.
And he famously asked, what were you thinking? So they're saying now, right at a point where Letterman is being challenged by Conan O'Brien, and they're trying to character. And I didn't understand. Rush Limbaugh was talking about this, and he kept saying that, you know, he's this old man, and so what they're trying to Letterman? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, 62.
No, that's old. Whatever.
Yeah.
How old's Rush?
I don't know, late 50s maybe.
Okay, so behind him.
Yeah. But in any event, this may have given Letterman this incredible boost right at a time where he's going, where he's neck and neck with Conan O'Brien.
Well, good. You know? So, although I wish we could just all just not talk about that crazy witch anymore. But she... It's not going away. I didn't turn my phone down. It was Al. He's making sure we're okay.
Yeah. I thought, don't tell me it's a text message.
Oh, okay. He texted me, and he said he wants to let me know what the deal was with my headphones and the delay. Because I'm clueless on this whole thing.
He pushed a button over here.
Yeah. It's that easy.
Now, we should have, here's what I want to introduce. People, everybody wants to talk about...
What? Sarah Palin?
No, I want to talk about addictive behavior, smoking and drugs. But
we can save it.
All right,
you know,
we'll save it.
It is a call-in talk show.
It's not all about you and me, Peter. Really? Let me just do this one. All right, now I'm gonna push a button. Don't get scared. You always get scared when I do this. All right. All right, eat the rich, out of the palace, into the ditch. Oh, they're not going there. And that was Crocus, of course. It is the biggest private yacht in existence and comes with a missile detection system, two helipads, a luxury spa, a swimming pool, and a miniature submarine. But when
It has its own submarine.
Yeah.
Who needs a submarine?
But when you're, but when you're Russian oligarch Roman Abramovich, it's only the most ostentatious display of wealth will do. His latest baby is the Eclipse, a 557-foot yacht, reported to have cost a staggering £300 million, which I think is about $450 million. As it glided out of it, it talks about all this. And, I mean, this thing is just, he's 40 years old. What is he? He owns four luxury vessels already. And you get the kind of situation.
Is this just for, like, himself?
Yeah.
And his family?
He's got to have friends.
I'm sure he does.
Annual overhead for the boat is more than £15 million. Cost him £73,000 just to fill up the tanks of his current largest boat. I mean, this is not even this one. And, when the Soviet Union collapsed, I mean, here they had this awful repressive bureaucracy. And I thought, you know, at least they have social forms of ownership, the major means of production, that if they administered in this democratic way, maybe everybody could benefit. And, you know, they wouldn't have essentially the cops running everything, the Soviet police. And I thought there's no way that they could get stuff back into private hands. So you would have this kind of obscene wealth in Russia the way, like you do here.
Right.
And, like in East Germany, the dissidents, what they objected to was the lifestyle, well, both the repressive nature of the government, but also that they did not meet the socialist ideals, that the people in power, the bureaucrats, were living like wealthy people. They had, what are the dachas? Isn't that what they call dachas? These summer homes. They drove big cars. They had great apartments. And they, the common people, the workers, had much, much less, and things weren't very good, East Germany.
Right.
So what these German dissidents wanted was essentially everything to be run according to the values that socialism professed, not this new class system, not this new, police state that had been developed. So instead, they just got capitalism at its worst, because East Germany is still kind of an economic disaster.
Peter Walt wrote in and said, "Why are you talking about right-wing radio? We already know that they're jerks. In case you haven't noticed, there are massive riots in Iran. This may be the biggest anti-fascist movement that we've seen since Tiananmen Square. Talk about it. You can complain about Limbaugh next week."
Okay.
he was just relating his couple of days in the lonely car.
Yeah, I like that. I like that, though.
Right.
I mean, everybody, what was last week? They said, why are you talking about abortion when the economy's falling apart?
Yeah, well, everyone has their issues right that they think we should be talking about.
We're going to get to you on hold, but let me, I can't wait to get this one call. All right, well, let's go back to Mad as Hell. This is, people in other countries, when things go wrong, they do things about it. I'm not saying that we should go riot. But, for instance, in France, there's been general strikes against the attempt of the government to carry out cutbacks on working people's salaries and benefits and work hours and what have you. Here in this country, we hated what one series of elites did to us and what they represented and what they did to the Constitution and the environment. That's the, the illegal Bush mob. But now we got a new group of elites in that are much, much better and have undone quite a number of things that that the Bush mob did. But we're still there. We're hoping that they're going to fix everything along the lines that will help us. We're hoping, we hope, and hope. And we sit on and we listen and we watch and we hope. We don't get involved in it directly. You've heard me say that 100 times. Well, there's something happening in Detroit right now. It could be big. There could be 50,000, 100,000 people involved in this event that started today, and it's going to go through the 14th through the, what is it, where it says right here, the 17th. Instead, there'll probably be a couple hundred.
Oh, yeah.
And
sure.
Some of you may turn on Channel 2 or 4 or 7 and go, oh, yeah, well, that's nice, what have you. This is an opportunity to get involved in this. You can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, PeterWerbe.com. It's called the People's Summit and Tent City at Grand Circus Park. And it's a People's Summit to present an alternative fight-back program for economic recovery, 4 days of active resistance to foreclosures and evictions, mass layoffs, war, and repression. Sounds like a good idea, and they have this enormous program of workshops and marches and what have you. There's actually the nerve of these people coming here. They're having the CEO, what's it called? National Summit of CEOs and Bankers. The National Summit of CEOs and Bankers. The guys that got us into this in the first place and are still trying to figure out how they can get the most amount of money out of it all, right? So there's going to be, for instance, on tomorrow night, Monday night, there's going to be a mass demonstration. We'll leave Grand Circus Park at 4 p.m. and march to the Renaissance Center to confront the National Summit of CEOs and Bankers. Our objective, they're saying, is to point out that corporations and banks responsible for the worst crisis since the Great Depression cannot provide a solution to the problems facing Detroit. So it's not going to be a mass demonstration. If they're lucky, they'll have 1,000 people. Because of the tens of thousands of people of you listening, there'll probably be 10 or 12 of us, I'm going down there, 10 or 12 of us that are going to show up. So, and instead, and there's going to be a big portion of you that are not only are not going to show up, but going to take your anger and listen to Fox News or listen to these right-wing talk show hosts and say, yeah, it's Barack Obama because he's not even a citizen, you know, and crap like that. So this is your opportunity. Or you can just go to peoplessummit.org, peoplessummit.org. So it's got two S's in the middle there. Check that out. Be there or be square, as we used to say.
Yes, as we used to say.
Call is coming up next. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Attention high school students, if you haven't decided where you want to go to college or still wondering how to finance your college education, it's time to check out Oakland University's Macomb to Oakland program known as M2O. You can attend classes at OU in Macomb County, in Oakland County, or any Macomb Community College campus. Take advantage of coordinated advising, libraries, and student activities. Best of all, you can save money. Some students can save up to $12,000 on their Oakland University bachelor degree. OU is a nationally ranked university that offers a wide variety of majors and great facilities. With M2O, you have more options, more flexibility, and more resources to ensure your success. Find out if the M2O program is right for you, or attend an upcoming informational meeting close to home at the OU Macomb location. Call 586-263-6242 or visit oakland.edu/M2O. Oakland University, your university in Macomb County.
Still not a member of the hottest players club in Detroit? Well, now's the time. Motor City Casino is giving new Club Metro members $10 in reward play just for signing up. Plus, they'll match your food and hotel offers from Windsor's Casino. That's $10 in reward play. Plus, they'll match your food and hotel offers from Windsor's Casino just for joining Club Metro by June 30th. Enjoy Detroit's most innovative entertainment destination, Motor City Casino Hotel. Offer valid for new club signups through June 30th.
Hey, have you heard about the new Cricket? Now you will. The new Cricket is Detroit's premier upscale gentlemen's club. The Cricket has been Michigan's best-kept secret for 30 years. And the all-new Cricket has gone out to make sure you have the time of your lives. The Cricket doesn't only have a hot new look, it also has the hottest ladies you've ever seen. A world-renowned five-star chef in Tyler Mackle and a laid-back atmosphere. Come to the Cricket and find out what all the buzz is about. The Cricket is located in Dearborn on the south side of Michigan Avenue between Telegraph and Beach Daily. Hot ladies, food, drink specials, and giveaways. The Cricket, the upscale club with a laid-back atmosphere. Parking is in the rear.
Taco Bell presents The Legend of Greg. Late night came upon him like a hooded ninja wearing slippers. With his stomach growling like an asthmatic Wolverine, Greg spoke the seven most important words of his life.
I'm going to go grab Taco Bell fourth meal.
Of course! Taco Bell fourth meal! A savory late night feast that would crush his hunger like a grape at a square dance. But then another problem emerged.
Melty, crunchy, spicy, or grilled. What should I get?
What great late-night taste to get. Greg was stuck in a riddle, wrapped in a tortilla.
Hey, why don't I just get a bunch of stuff?
Eureka! Check out the brain on Greg. He solved his problem like a one-piece puzzle. The only possible answer for all late-night tastes you crave is Taco Bell.
Cool.
Very cool, Greg. Very cool indeed. Think outside the bun. Taco Bell is open until 2 a.m. or later. Hours may vary by location.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Jalene Jordan, my co-host, has a correction to make here.
Well, yeah, apparently I had my prostitutes mixed up. You know, I'm sorry, I can't keep it all together all the time, but it was Eddie Murphy who had the transgender prostitute.
Okay.
And Hugh Grant had Divine Brown, who's just a Just a prostitute.
Just a
female
prostitute.
Yeah. Right.
One thing we were talking in your absence last week about...
And thank you, by the way. I'm sorry. Roger for correcting me.
Yeah.
Roger has all the prostitute knowledge.
He knows. He knows,
he knows things.
Yeah. Well, last week we had a number of calls, including someone from the Tiger Stadium Conservancy that was trying to retain part of the old ballpark. Got knocked down.
Is it just completely...
I guess.
Done?
I guess.
You know, I go to lunch down at Slo's, which is like right around there. So, and it's always I take that way personally down Trumbull and blah blah blah. And it's just going to be so sad.
Yeah. I guess maybe I could imagine what these right wingers could make of this, but Obama invokes Jesus more than Bush.
I saw that.
Yeah. Well, he talks about him all the time. You know that why that is? Of course, because he's a secret Muslim.
Oh, yeah, and he loves Jesus a lot.
He's trying to throw him off.
Yeah, he's trying to throw him off.
All right. Oh, the guy Jerry from Berkeley left. He said he thinks you're left wing.
I thought, wow, how did he come to that conclusion?
How perceptive.
Amazing.
All right. Let's see. Here's JW and Taylor. JW, you're our first caller. You're on the air with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
I want to talk to you about the rich people. I think that if everybody was rich, you just think about it. If everybody was rich, you couldn't get nobody to cut your grass, mow your lawn, do anything like that because they'd be rich.
Thank you. And there's got to be...
Don't they make sense to you? I mean, come on.
Who's going to work at the fast food restaurants? Who's going to do all of those jobs that don't bring in all of that money, you know?
Right. And if everybody was rich, the world would be in total chaos.
You're right. I agree with you.
All right, JW, thank you.
Thank you, JW.
That is true. So this system depends on a permanent class system.
Yeah.
With a permanent group of poorly paid working people.
I wish we could just be all kind of, you know, living communally and dancing around naked and lighting bonfires.
Hey,
and
take off your clothes. We'll start right here.
No fires in the studio.
No, not the fire. I wasn't interested in the fires.
I was trying to throw you off.
Yes, all right. Here's Jerry's back. Hey, what's up, Jerry?
Hey, how you doing?
Jerry!
Hi, guys.
Hi. So how'd you come up with this?
A couple things, man. Look, that whole Rush Limbaugh thing being like the head of Republican Party is crap, man. That guy's like an entertainer, man. He's a loudmouth talk show host, but I'll tell you what. You know what I mean? That's like...
We didn't just make that up, though. Like, we totally didn't make it up because that's who's speaking for the Republican Party right now.
Newt Gingrich
is speaking for the Republican Party. Sarah Palin, which they're trying to kick her out. And Joe the Plumber!
Hey, I understand those guys, yeah, but they're not, you know, Michael Steele's the head of the Republican Party. Now, anyways, my whole standpoint, yes, I'm more of independent than anything, and I do a lot of watching of both networks, MSNBC, some CNN, and Fox News. But the whole thing, like, I keep listening to you guys, and, you know, I don't really listen to the Riff too often at nighttime, and right now I'm garage, man. I'm hearing all this stuff, and I'm like, wait a second, man. You guys are leaning a little to the left. You
like,
know
wait, a little. Wait, a little.
We could lean a lot more.
We gotta lean more. If you think it's a little, you know how to hurt a guy, Jerry.
Yeah, really.
Look, you guys, come on. Now,
we are so far left, we have fallen off the spectrum.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man. Look, hey, look. There's a lot of things out there that you know, a lot of people don't agree with and stuff like that. And I could nitpick Bush to death, and I can nitpick Obama to death. But you know, kind of walk down the middle, guys. I'm telling you, man. Hey,
let me say this. Whatever you think, Jerry, however you label my politics or Jalene's, essentially all we want for people is to have a life that's not filled with stress and fear and
poverty,
anxiety about our income, whether you're poor, whether you're middle class and suffering anxiety. None of this has to be. We got the richest country in the world. We have this absolutely wealthy world in which we live. And the solutions, the mainstream solutions, are now being put together by Barack Obama. And essentially what they're going to do is reestablish the system that Bush and the rest of them wrecked. Well, there was something to be said. I'll tell you, a lot of liberals talk about the Clinton years as, oh, those were the grand old days. Well, there was something to say for them, but that still America has never realized its potential, and it could. So, I'm going to tell you, we have a friend, actually we haven't seen him in years, Jim Hightower, who used to be the Secretary of Agriculture for Texas, and now is a left-wing talk show host. And he says, he's got a book out, says, there ain't nothing in the middle of the road except dead armadillos and yellow lines.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right, thank you, Jerry, but I appreciate the advice.
I'm glad you're listening.
Yes, thank you so much. Here is Sherry in Warren. Sherry, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Peter. Hello, Jolene. Welcome back. Yeah,
thank you.
I called you last week regarding Tiger Stadium, but
I got your email too.
Yeah, this week I wanted to talk about the platform that these right-wing, like, shock jocks are given throughout this country. You know, I'm returning to Detroit after a long, long absence, you know, like 20 plus years. And I'll tell you what, I lived in San Francisco. And I'll tell you what, I heard Mike Malloy for the first time in San Francisco when Air America started. But then he got thrown off, and then Michael Savage,
yeah.
Okay, then I moved back to New York, okay, for my band, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Don Imus.
Well, rather than, you know, is the glass half full or half empty? Get this. You got all this, everyone you mentioned, these guys have millions of listeners, although, you know, it's what I say. It's the fascist third in every radio audience that listens to them regularly and believes them. A lot of people say, I like to hear them because they're good entertainers, as, pardon me, Jerry said before you. But, even with all of that, even with there being very, very little liberal or left-wing representation, the American people are way to the left of anything that is in the mainstream. Every, you know, when you start talking about, almost everybody wants universal health care, which we should talk
about. I don't know
about.
If almost everybody does. I think there is a big, huge percentage of people who don't.
The majority of doctors do.
Well, yeah, but, you know, these Republicans who don't want our government dollars going to help people who are too lazy to go get a job in healthcare themselves, you know.
I mean, I don't know why.
That's what they say.
Well, you would think every businessman would want there to be universal health care because then the businesses wouldn't have to pick up the cost.
True, yeah.
I mean, I can't even imagine what the bill here is in our building for the, you know, the health care.
True.
So, yet with all of that right-wing propaganda and so little on the left going out, we still managed to have, and it's not even a matter of being, I mean, you can call what we believe in left-wing, but really what it is, it's a, I don't know, a humanistic...
I call it a conscience.
A conscience-based approach. Let's have tolerance. Let's have people have the fruits of their labor. Let's not, as I said to Jerry, let's not have people filled with anxiety about the economic situation and whether they're going to lose their job and all
or their
that.
Homes.
Yeah, if that's left wing, so be it. All right, Sherry, thank you very much.
Is she still there?
Yeah, she was.
Oh, I wanted to know what band she's in. I was going to let her give a plug. Email us.
Call back or
I'm a musician.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Well, I got to get this one. Here's Nate way down in Toledo. Nate, hi, it's Peter and Jolene on WRIF. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, you guys were talking about Sarah Palin and Miss California a few minutes ago.
Yeah, right.
And you called Miss California a homophobe for what she said, but yet when David Letterman makes these remarks about Sarah Palin's daughter, he has free speech. Can you tell me how that makes any sense?
Okay, well, first of all, I think she's a homophobe because I think she's a homophobe. I mean, she's joined this.
And she has the right of free speech.
Yeah, she can say it, but I have the right of free speech as well. And as far as David Letterman, what was that point?
She said that when, you know, we support David Letterman's right to
for
joke about her daughter, but then we condemn Miss California.
He can joke about an 18-year-old woman.
That was a description of her. I mean, the reason that she got bumped wasn't because of her homophobic remarks. It's not even clear that she lost the Miss USA title because of her remarks.
Right.
I mean, you know, I didn't think she was such hot stuff in any event. But,
well, she's one of those real plastic types,
yeah,
you know.
Well, she was. She got plastic in the boobs.
Yeah, just the whole thing.
But in any event, Miss California, Carrie Prejean, has the right to say whatever. Yeah, but this was a private business. It's owned by Donald Trump. It was a contract, and she broke the contract. I mean, Trump said, okay, listen, just be Miss U.S.
Do your thing. Show
California.
To your appearances. She wasn't showing up to her appearances.
Yeah. So what do you think? Well, I guess we stopped him cold. All right. Thank you, Nate. Thank you. Let's see. Here is Andy. Andy, where are you calling from?
Farms and Hills.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
How you guys doing? Welcome back. Peter,
thank you.
I'm glad you got back from your vacation.
Yeah, well, it wasn't much of a vacation, but go ahead.
Well, I know how it is to take those long trips.
Yeah. It was the trip from hell.
We got a lot of visitors calling.
You know, Andy, actually, I said to a friend of mine, I said, do you want to take the ride with me? And he said, I don't know. I said, come on, we'll get a case of beer. And he started considering. I said, I'm only kidding, man.
You don't even drink beer.
No, I do, too. I just put a couple of cold ones in
you
the refrigerator.
Did? I thought you were more of a gin and tonic kind of guy.
I drink.
Wine.
If it's got alcohol in it, I drink.
Right.
Go ahead, Andy.
Two reasons why I'm calling, guys. First of all, everybody needs to give Barack Obama a break. He's doing the best he can. Hey, how easy is it to be the president of the United States?
Especially after 8 years of Bush.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. We don't need another Bush. My second thing is, I'd like to make a comment about blame the rich, blame the rich. And I heard the Waltons, and I take offense in that because you know what? Walton's is Walmart. I work for Walmart, so I'm like, oh, I got to call this. I got to call on this one.
Wait a minute. You support Walmart?
Well, I work for them.
That's where he gets paid.
So I know.
I can see supporting him if that's who's paying you, but do you really want us to get started on Walmart?
How come you don't hate him?
Guys, I'm going to clear this up.
Okay.
I don't support them.
Yeah.
Because they have the, in the back room, they have the whole freaking family history from the old man to the whole family, the war history, the family, where they grew up, blah, blah, blah. I don't support them, but you know what? They pay my bills, and I make the customers happy, and we have low prices.
Well, I know. The reason you have low prices is because they screw people badly in other countries, and they make so much money because they're screwing you and other employees with terrible wages.
Well, yeah, I know. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. And, you know, when it comes down to economic problem, I mean, a job is a job anymore. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of people are saying, you know, I'll be happy you have a job. And
well, and I mean, to some extent, that's true. And
yeah.
I'm not being critical of you for appreciating still staying employed.
My sister used to work for Walmart. She used to go around the country and open up stores.
Wow. And,
I know.
And drive other little stores out of business.
You know, when you say blame the rich, the Waltons, you know, it's not their fault that the old man died and they got the company. But I will say this, when the sons took over the company, the family business that Sam Walton started, he made it into a business, you know, family business.
Yeah.
Well, a big-ass business.
It just became a business, and it's not run properly, but it's just me saying, but... You know, people say, oh, you only make, you know, work 2 hours a day, and you make crappy wage. You know, we get paid vacations, we get raises in pay.
Well, I know, but they could
afford... Which you should.
They could afford to pay you a lot more, they could afford to give you a lot more benefits. They could, I mean, they together, the five heirs, or they still have five, because one of them, you know, got in a plane accident. But anyway, one of them, the daughter, I mean, she spends millions and millions of dollars supporting far right-wing causes and trying to keep the wealthy from being taxed any more than they are. I mean, these people, they could afford to have 80% of their wealth taxed, and it wouldn't make a bit of difference. They'd still be richer than almost anybody in the world. So they, you know, they're a piece of work. I mean, the reason that they have so much money is because the people that do the production in other countries are exploited to such an incredible level, and because they've been able to keep the wages down here in the United States as well. And anybody tries to unionize like they did in Montreal and I forgot somewhere else as well, they close the building down.
Prevented anything from even possibly happening.
Yeah, the message is that you even try to unionize to get decent wages like your fathers or grandfathers did, and you won't have a job. So that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's economic terrorism. All right, Andy, thank you very much.
Glad you're putting food on the table, though, I have to say.
And it's better than, what did Bush say? I know what it means to put food on your family.
Right.
Boy, we don't miss him, do we?
No, we don't. I told you about the Facebook group I joined. It's... Being happy that George Bush is no longer president, that's the name of it.
Really?
Or maybe more like elated.
Yeah. All right, let's take one more call before our break. Here's John from Sterling Heights. Hi, John.
How you doing, Peter?
We're doing great.
Hey,
so is Jolene.
From Walmart, if he wants to eat hot dogs, fine and dandy. Let him. He could be eating steak. He's too stupid. But let me get to what you were saying, Worthy. You kind of forced me to call you. I don't like calling radio shows. They're a waste of time. But
well, you sound familiar, though. You call.
He calls a lot.
Things
yeah.
about Obama. Now, listen, I got no use for Rush Limbaugh. I'm glad Bush is gone. I wish they'd hang him. I got no use for Walmart. I don't shop there. But when you tell me Obama is doing something, I want you to tell me what he's doing. So far, he's a lame duck.
Well, he's not a lame duck. I mean, lame duck means after your... I mean, Bush was a lame duck between the November election and when he went out of office. But Obama has reversed a lot of these policies by executive order. I mean, about stem cell research, about a lot of stuff on the environment, any number of other executive orders. But what's your biggest criticism of him, John?
Okay, real quick. Gas prices are approaching $3.50 on my corner over here.
You gotta go to a different corner.
Wait a minute. Don't tell me that kind of garbage. Now listen to this. Gas prices are going up to $5, Warby. You know it and I know it. The banks are still charging usury rates.
Yeah.
I want to see this man that got on TV and told me he's tired of the people being ripped off by the banks and the oil industry. I want to see him get his butt in there, this messiah. And I like Obama. I voted for him. But I'm disappointed, and I don't think he's going to do anything. I think we're going to be about 10% better than we were under Bush.
It's been 5 months. I mean, he's got a lot on his plate.
I mean, I've got a lot of sympathy in many ways for what John says. But he is operating, as I said earlier, within the dominant model of economics and politics. And there's no room for him to operate outside of it. Because it's like during the 1930s, I mean, one of the reasons that Roosevelt had the Wagner Act passed, which gave the go-ahead for people to unionize, it was because the working class was striking everywhere. There were even general strikes. And he had to cut off radicalism at the pass to give some reforms. Well, right now, we're as I said earlier, we're just sitting on our butts hoping that Barack Obama will devise a cure for cancer. And people say, my God, you know, he didn't... he didn't do that. But I share some of your concerns, John. I appreciate it. He actually sounds like a friend of mine.
He does.
I love to hear him.
So you know who this guy is?
No. I don't know him personally at all. No.
Yeah. I like that he called you Werby.
Me too. Yeah, so does this guy now. All right, Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. We're at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
We get all of your... wait till you see this one, Jolene. We get all of your calls when we come back. But I want to talk a little about addictive substances.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
This is attorney D. Todd Williams. Facing a misdemeanor, a felony, or a probation violation is stressful. Knowing how to proceed and who to trust is critically important. But hiring the right attorney can make all the difference. If you're facing charges, then it's time to give me a call. Attorney D. Todd Williams at 877-932-9200. I'm an aggressive attorney who will give you straight answers, sound advice, and workable solutions to your legal challenge. From misdemeanors to serious felonies to drunk driving and drug cases, I'm the one to call at 877-932-9200. Don't avoid that pending criminal case or open warrant. Come in and see us for a free consultation to review your case and assess your options. You will speak directly to me, discussing strategies, solutions, and outcomes that will allow you to get on with your life. Let the difference in your criminal matter be hiring the right attorney. Call us at 877-932-9200. That's 877-932-9200. Or visit us on the web at dtoddlaw.com. I'm D. Todd Williams, helping you to understand and exercise your rights.
High on the Hog, and for a great cause. It's the 4th Annual Rally in Hell, tomorrow at Hell Creek Ranch in Hell, Michigan. Get on board one of the rides departing from many local Harley-Davidson dealerships. Check out great live music from Send More Cops, 60 Second Crush, and more. 100% of net proceeds to benefit Ozone House, helping runaway and homeless youth. Get more details at www.therallyinhell.com or at WRIF.com.
Oh, yeah. If you think there's nothing new happening at your favorite hangout, if you think there isn't something exciting going on, then we've got a message for you.
You don't know Jack!
Introducing the Jack, a cool new way to play Michigan Lottery's Club Keno. Allow us to fill you in on a few facts. For just one extra dollar, the Jack gets you a seven-number easy pick wager. Match all seven, and you win the jackpot.
That's a Jack fact!
But it's not a regular jackpot. With the Jack, this one starts at $2,000 and rolls over every 4 minutes, getting bigger and bigger until somebody hits it.
That's a Jack fact!
And with the Jack, jackpots could reach $20,000 or more daily, with winners expected throughout the day.
That's a lot of money.
Some days it could reach as high as $100,000. So if you love Club Keno and you don't give this game a try, then you don't know fun, you don't know excitement.
And you don't know Jack!
So come on, turn some cold hard facts into some cold hard cash with
the Jack!
New from the Michigan Lottery.
Your family could win the ultimate friends and family reunion from Verizon Wireless. Register at www.wrif.com and you can win 10 Samsung Alias 2 phones with a Magic QWERTY keypad using E-Link technology and a unique flip-style format, plus a 42-inch plasma Samsung TV and a catered party for up to 50 people. Sign up for your chance to win today. No purchase necessary. Opened only to legal U.S. residents 18 years of age or older. Void where prohibited. Sweepstakes ends June 14, 2009. For complete official rules, visit www.wrif.com.
A true rock and roll supergroup has landed. Guitar legend Joe Satriani, Red Hot Chili Peppers drummer Chad Smith, Van Halen's Michael Anthony and Sammy Hagar. This is Chickenfoot. Oh! Chickenfoot's new self-titled album is coming your way with a huge sound serving up serious rock thunder. Take cover, because the foot is coming down.
Got money, got fame, fast cars and everything.
Sammy Hagar, Joe Satriani, Michael Anthony, Chad Smith are Chickenfoot.
I'm on dance, I gotta sing, rock soul, blues, sing anything.
Chickenfoot, rock gods. A new album available now at Best Buy. Order online at BestBuy.com.
Log on WRAF.com now and click on the Allstate Virtual Key banner. It's a brand new way for you to nav a key that could unlock a 2009 Harley-Davidson XL1200 Nightster, courtesy of Motor City Harley-Davidson. That's WRAF.com. Then click on the Allstate Virtual Key banner from Allstate and 101 WRAF.
Everything that rocks. The Sweet Life with your Detroit Tigers and the Rift.
Are you ready for the weather?
Listen all this weekend for your chance to win tickets in a luxury suite to see the Tigers take on the Indians. Sunday, June 12th, catered by Little Caesars. Every Rift Suite ticket winner will also score a gift card for a free hot and ready pizza.
Stop at the Little Caesars today for a delicious, freshly made hot and ready pepperoni pizza for only $5. No ordering, no waiting. It's hot and ready when you are. All day, every day, only at Little Caesars.
The Tigers VIP Weekend.
Listen and win.
The Little Caesars at 101.
WRIF.
The Rift. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Jillian Jordan is with me, and we will be taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF for the next hour. And then I will be interviewing John Marks, who's written a book called Why I Am Not a Scientist. It's a pretty interesting interview. He's talking about creationism, scientific fraud, and modern scientific racism, which, the people are still basing their racism not in, just in their stupid prejudices, but actually trying to find some scientific basis for it. So the guy's pretty cool. Let me see what's the other one. Is Daniel Pinchbeck. Yeah, he was this is actually a repeat show, but he wrote a book called 2012. No, it's not the Rush. It's 2112, isn't it?
Right, yes, it is.
Yeah. But 2012, which is part of this Mayan prophecy about everything's going to come to a head in 2012. And this guy's not a woo-woo freak. Also, if you go to my website, you can find out more information on these authors. Peter Werby, WERBE.com. There's also, I forgot to mention this, I got a trailer on there for the new Michael Moore movie.
Oh, And which one is this? Is this?
I think it's called going to be called Save Our CEOs.
Okay.
He's got to be joking. And also, what does it say here on the website? MSNBC News Bimbos discuss new Michael Moore films prove that even a broken clock is correct twice a day. A stopped clock is right twice a day. You never heard that phrase?
No.
You know what I'm saying? If it stopped and it says 105, it's correct twice a day.
Okay.
I love that phrase.
Okay, you do? It doesn't thrill me at all.
Also, the big action in Detroit, 4 days of active resistance, political discussion, and strategizing for people's stimulus plans and an economic bill of rights for working people and the poor. There's a tent city and near the National Big Business Gathering at the Renaissance Center. That's all downtown. There's a tent city in Grand Circus Park. And you can go to my website. Again, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, and all the information is there. Okay, let's talk about addictive stuff. They just passed, they being the Congress, a new anti-smoking bill, which will not allow light cigarettes or candy-flavored smokes. In fact, here is a list of things. Cigarette packages will have warning labels that cover 50% of the front and rear. The word warning must be included in capital letters. Any remaining tobacco-related sponsorship of sports and entertainment events will be banned, as will be giveaways of non-tobacco items with the purchase of a tobacco product. A federal ban will be imposed on all outdoor tobacco advertising within 1,000 feet of schools and playgrounds. Mm-hmm. Point-of-sale advertising will be limited to adult-only facilities. Retailers who sell to minors will be subject to federal enforcement and penalties. Smokers, particularly the younger crowd, will find they can no longer buy cigarettes sweetened by candy flavors. They can't advertise them any longer as mild or light. And let's see. It says with an estimated 3,500 young people smoking their first cigarette each day, the ban on flavorings alone could have significant health benefits, said Dr. Adam Goldstein, director of the University of North Carolina Tobacco Prevention and Evaluation Program. As I've said before, they have addiction rates, and things like crack, you know, is like 25% addictive, or heroin is 30%. I don't know. I mean, somewhere down there. Cigarettes, 100% addictive. You smoke, you're addicted. I was, you were, right?
Yeah. I mean, right, I still will have the occasional little ciggy, I have to say, usually involves alcohol.
All right, let's move on. Other factors that could cut in tobacco use could include the sharp rise in prices. But they put in a 62-cent-a-pack federal increase tax to pay for children's health programs. So this is so weird. The government is depending on people continuing to smoke in order to
pay for
children's health. So I don't know what
messed up
that's going to be. Specifically, the measure for the first time, pardon me, will give the Food and Drug Administration authority to regulate what goes into tobacco products, demand changes or elimination of toxic substances, and block the introduction of new products. Now, what's going on here? There are tremendous additives in cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
And their friends in Congress, just
like
liquor.
Bleach and all kinds of
stuff to keep them burning when you set it down. If you have pure tobacco and you're not puffing on it, it goes out.
And there's something, I can't remember the chemical, that makes them more mellow.
Well, many people have argued that cigarettes without additives don't have the carcinogenic effect that the ones that do. And that's why, what are those things,
American Spirit.
American Spirit cigarettes, yeah. They asked Yan Meek, 42 years old, a finance analyst from Jackson, Florida, who doesn't smoke, and suggested the legislation could lead to, quote, too much government control over personal lives, personal choices. Well, these are choices presented by corporations, and they have enormous social costs. I mean, all these people, the people we know, who doesn't know anybody that hasn't died of lung cancer?
True.
Should I say that? Do you? I do.
I do, or has been affected by it. Yeah,
or affected by it. So there's enormous social costs, not just in the deaths, but also the actual financial costs. And the tobacco companies are always stuck with the fact that their best customers are dying.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to find replacements. But, okay, Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times today said drugs won the war.
Really? Right?
The war on drugs.
I didn't know this.
The war on drugs.
Was won by drugs.
Was drawn by drugs.
Okay.
War on drugs. I can't even drive on drugs.
Can I tell you something?
What?
I was at an event one time, and someone who's a listener of ours came out to see me just to talk about Night Call. And he goes, and how many times can Peter Werby say war on drugs? I can't even drive on drugs. I go, don't try to stop him. That's his thing.
Yeah, my wife's, I told her something. She said, are you going to keep telling me the same stupid joke year after year?
You know what you need to say? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably. I said, it's not going to get better, dear. This year marks the 40th anniversary of President Richard Nixon's start of the war on drugs. It now appears that drugs have run. One. They've won.
They've run away with it.
Yeah,
that's what you meant.
Norm Stamper, who was the former police chief of Seattle, who I've interviewed before, said, we've spent $1 trillion prosecuting the war on drugs. What do we have to show for it? Drugs are more readily available at lower prices and higher levels of potency. He says it's a dismal failure. For that reason, he favors legalization of drugs, perhaps by the equivalent of state liquor stores or registered pharmacists. Other experts favor keeping drug protection, production and sales illegal, but decriminalizing possession, as some foreign countries have done. Let's see. Here in the United States, 4 decades of drug war have had 3 consequences. First, we have vastly increased the proportion of our population in prison. The United States now incarcerates people at a rate nearly 5 times the world average. In part, that's because the number of people in prison for drug offenses rose from about 41,000 30 years ago to 500,000 today. Second, we have empowered criminals at home and terrorists abroad. One reason many prominent economists have favored easing drug laws is that interdiction raises prices, because that's what happens. When you bust people, it doesn't do anything. It's just the people lower down the line think, okay, I'm now move into that little position on the drug distribution situation.
I don't know what you're trying to get at.
No, what I mean, all right.
In the system?
Yeah, no, if somebody, I mean, it's a Mobius strip. It's a self-actualizing loop. So you have this prison industrial complex, right, that we've always talked about.
Yes.
Its main customers, are, as we've seen, are people that break the drug laws.
Yeah.
And it's not like a deterrent. In fact, when someone gets busted, mm-hmm. it just allows more opportunity for people lower down or to move up or to enter the system of distribution.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah. One reason many prominent economists have favored easing drug laws is that interdiction raises prices. So that's the other thing. If every amount of drug that people try to get in this country was available, it would lower the prices significantly.
Yeah.
So interdiction actually raises the prices and creates greater profits. For everyone, including the drug cartels to the Taliban. Former presidents of Mexico, Brazil, and Colombia this year jointly implored the United States to adopt a new approach to narcotics based on the public health campaign against tobacco. Third, we have squandered resources. Jeffrey Myron, a Harvard economist, found that federal, state, and local governments spend $44 billion annually enforcing drug prohibition. We spend 7 times as much on drug interdiction, policing, and imprisonment as on treatment. And it goes on and on with this. This is Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times. And you ever think about it? Why don't we want people to do drugs?
I really don't know.
Well, part of it is, the people would say it's a health concern. We don't want people addicted to dangerous substances. And that's understandable. You know, it's a misuse of any intoxicating substance, whether it's alcohol or
damaging to your life.
Yeah, it does not help. Really.
Although some of it's just damn fun.
Yeah. So I've heard.
Yeah.
So, but it really has a moral basis to it. It's the same people that, let's forget about the same people. It is.
Are you categorizing again?
Categorizing? It began, in the 1930s, that the people that use marijuana and what have you were the colored races. You know, Mexicans, African Americans, colored people.
They were feeling a lot better than the white folks weren't they?
So, and it was associated with jazz musicians and sexual promiscuity.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Not that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shoot.
So there's a real moral edge to it. Because if they were really concerned about
they should have seen me in college. That's all I have to say.
Okay. If there was a real health concern, they would have banned cigarettes, right?
Yes.
You're having too good a time, like you did in college.
Really?
By the way, Sherry called in to say she doesn't have a band together right now.
Oh, remember, she doesn't? Sure. Okay, all right, all right. I was just curious.
Let's go get those phones. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Kurt in Royal Oak. Hi, Kurt. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening to you, Mr. Orby, and your co-host. I'm the first-time caller.
Welcome.
Hi.
Long time listener, you.
Okay, great.
So it's a pleasure to be on.
Thank you.
It took you this long? Took you 40 years?
Well, yeah, it basically has.
Okay, well, never too late.
My first comment is about the people that are wealthy in the United States or in the world, for that matter. Especially here, we have an opportunity. This is a land of opportunity, and we're able to do what we want to do. You're able to go back to years and years ago where people invented things and did things that were creative and made a lot of sense for the world and for the community. And what you're lacking here is you're saying that we're the people that are rich. We're not allowed to be rich. A lot of people call in and say, well, you know, because a big rich man took my money and he's not paying my wages. Well, there are all there's some people out there that are well-to-do that pay their employees well.
Well, there are some, but Kurt, let me ask you a question.
It's true. My father, for example, was, you know, he's loaded, and he had a lot of businesses that he just sold recently, and he was so good to those employees.
Well, there's a lot of people. I know people as well.
Absolutely.
Kurt, how come you're not rich?
Well, I didn't say I wasn't.
Yeah, can they? Yeah,
I don't know. I thought he was. He said we.
Yeah.
I caught on to that.
Wait a minute.
Are you in the top 2%?
Yeah, rich doesn't mean, you know, a couple $100,000 a year and living on Vincetta Boulevard or something like that. That's not rich. That's just middle class.
Although that is a lovely boulevard.
It is.
Mr. Werby, what? I'm visiting anyway. What makes you rich?
Well, it's income. Mainly.
The top 2% or the top 1%.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have to give you all my details, but okay, I am. But the thing is, and then I want to skip on because I know you guys are lacking on time. But I want to go back to the issue of the Miss America.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, but freedom of speech there. Okay,
yeah.
Somebody asked a question from one of the judges.
Yeah, and it was Perez Hilton.
Yeah, and I don't remember their names, and but the thing is, and she responded with a heartfelt topic
okay.
That she believed in.
Yeah,
I mean,
but there's
no
reason. She came in second in the contest. There's no reason to think necessarily that she would have come in first if she would have said, "I think people should do whatever they want." I mean, that's just the supposition that she didn't become Miss USA because of her remark. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. I have no why. I mean, this is this stupid contest to begin with. And then Donald Trump gave her a second chance, and she just did not make the terms of her contract. Boom. End of story. All right,
hey, at least she got three boobies out of it.
Yes. All right. Dr. Kurt. Let's see. Here is Jeff. Jeff's in Plymouth. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I look forward to listening to you guys every Sunday.
Well, thank you.
And by the way, I'm that rich.
but you are—you're rich emotionally.
Probably Kurt
well,
isn't rich.
I know
either.
You were talking about the radio stations, and if you look at the ratings, I mean, conservative talk radio and even Fox News, I mean, they get huge ratings.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
And that's why that's why you hear them in the liberal. If you look at the liberal, you know, the media. I mean, even the newsprint now. You look at the Wall Street Journal is doing very well, and yet the other ones are really suffering. And that's why.
How's the Post doing? I wonder. The Washington Post is okay, isn't it?
You know, all print is having a problem. I don't know whether the Wall Street Journal is doing well or not. I mean, that's a newspaper essentially that. upper middle class and wealthy people subscribe to. But you know, the one of the reasons that they have the prominence they do is because of conservative ownership of media. I mean, contrary to what these right wingers say. I mean, they're on, like, Rush Limbaugh's on 600 stations, and he talks about the liberal media. Now he calls it the government controlled media. Well, he's got 600 outlets, and like Mike Malloy, our friend, who's a terrific talk show host. You can't hear him in Detroit. I don't think you've been able to hear him here for 5 or 6 years. He, you know, he's got like, I think I talked to him the other day, he's got like 16 stations. And the reason that he's not on is the same reason that Jalene and I, when we did a nationally syndicated talk show host and we lost station after station after station, was because of our politics. Because they said, we can't have you on our station criticizing President Bush.
That will scare off the advertisers.
I have a hard time believing that, because I think, you know, I think if people are going to, if you're good, people are going to listen to you.
Let's back up.
Listen to it. It was about the owners of the station. It wasn't even about the listening audience.
But let's back up here. You have a hard time believing Jalene and me when we say we lost stations not because of our ratings, but because we offended the owners? That's what happened. I mean,
for real.
For real.
Isn't that terrible? I think it's just the you know, if you have a business, you want to be profitable, obviously, to pay your employees. And if you have someone that's bringing in great ratings and they're bringing in advertisers, are willing to spend money.
Well, yeah. The deal was that some of these, you know, around 2000 when we began our national show, some of these station said, well, we'll take a flyer on this. We'll see how this works. Instead of, and some of them had the rest of the day filled with conservative hosts. So they when they heard us, they thought, oh, no. You know, I mean, we never even got really in many ways off the ground. We did for about, what, 2.5, 3 years?
3 years. And, you know, the couple of markets that embraced us, adored us, flew us out, and out, you know, that kind of thing. Santa Fe, New Mexico, Santa Cruz, California, and we were embraced. But there's also a community of more like-minded people there. There's artists and such, you know.
Yeah, in an area like Detroit, where is the full-time, I mean, there actually is, and I don't want anybody to say it, because, you know, we want every listener here. But there is a liberal talk station here in Detroit, totally mismanaged, nobody knows it's there, a terrible signal, and here you have, and on the other hand, you have these big powerhouse stations that have Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage. And this is in a liberal city, in a tri-county liberal area, in a liberal state, and in the major city, you know, there's not a real representation of liberal views. That is pure politics. And for these right-wingers to still whine that the liberal media, well, you know, I'll tell you, it's conservative ownership.
They would like to shut us all down. These people you're talking about on the conservative side would like to shut all left-wing radio completely down.
That's right.
I have to say, very proud to be at this station and always thankful for this 3 hours that we have every week.
And one of the things, here's another thing. I've said this any number of times, too. If you ask any conservative, what's wrong with this country? Well, let me put it another way. If you ask any liberal, any leftist, any progressive, what's wrong with this country? They can begin a laundry list of things that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
Economically, politically, who's got the power, health care, the environment, labor rights, women's rights, on and on and
on.
You ask a conservative, what's wrong with this country? Liberals.
Yeah.
That's it. If it wasn't for liberals and liberal policies, this would be a wonderful and perfect country. Yeah.
I'd be out of here.
These people are, they're pretty weird. Let me.
They give us plenty to talk about, though. What would we do?
Let's get our next caller on.
And I'm getting really sick of guys named Todd. You know, it's just a goofy, it's a goofy name, okay? Hi, what's your name? Todd.
In fact, it's Todd from Southgate. Todd, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. All right, I'm picking on Jalene tonight.
That's good.
I hear this. I've been forewarned that you're really, really pissed at me and that I'm a hypocrite. Fire
yes,
away.
You are. I'm not really pissed at you at all. I don't get pissed at you guys. You guys make me laugh.
Okay, but fire away. I'm ready for you.
All right.
Wait. Let me ask you a question. Oh, no, you're a taxi car. You still have that job? You're not now a petroleum transfer agent, are you? I just heard that ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, I'm driving right now in my taxi.
Okay, go ahead. Do you have a fare?
Yeah, actually, I'm driving one of our employees home right now.
Okay. Go ahead.
So, anyway, you call Carrie Prejean a homophobe.
Yeah.
Okay. So, if the exact same question was given to Barack Obama, and it was, he answered it the exact same way. So, are you willing to call him a homophobe as well, or are you going to be the usual hypocrite that you guys are and say no? Go ahead.
Okay, well, I pretty much think that anyone who doesn't believe in the equal rights for homosexual individuals in this country are homophobes to a certain extent, yes.
And I would say that Barack Obama and somebody, you know,
I think he's a sellout on this issue.
Yeah, I don't think I think that's a better way to put it, Todd, is that he's a sellout. I think that he is perfectly okay with gay marriage, but opportunistically, to protect a flank, that he says that he is opposed to gay marriage. And that, that point has been made before, is that Carrie Prejean's, position on gay marriage is absolutely no different than Barack Obama's. But, you know...
Yeah, but isn't he okay with civil unions, though?
He's, and maybe she is, too.
I don't know.
But
she
whatever.
Is not. She joined that marriage rights family organization.
I don't know. How's she on that? Do you know, Todd?
I'm not sure either, to tell you the truth. But this is one thing I don't understand. When somebody just simply disagrees with your guys' views... It's okay to sit there and call them names and call them this and call them that. Like, you know, you called her a bimbo a couple weeks ago. I mean, why is it okay for you guys to talk like that? But boy, as soon as the mean, evil conservatives do the same thing, well, then they're wrong in your eyes.
Well, so we're wrong in your eyes and they're wrong in our eyes, whatever. And you know, on the bimbo thing, I have to say, as someone who I have a college degree, I feel like I'm a relatively intelligent woman. And you know what? Women like that, I'm sorry, they're bimbos.
You always pause, Todd, which means you're out of here. But thank you for calling and being such a loyal listener and caller. 313-298-WRIF.
He's very loyal to us.
Here's Jennifer in Ypsilanti. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air. Yes, if you're Jennifer.
Okay. Sorry, it cut out for a second. I just had two things. One was on the Obama thing. One was on the rich people thing.
Sure.
The Obama thing, rich people, yeah, okay, hold on.
Either one.
Are you listening?
Sorry, you guys have been talking about so much, I'm trying to
know
exactly my
so,
original.
What's your response to what we're talking about with the wealthy?
The wealthy was, there's like, you know, a certain point to whether you're kind of an evil or non-wealthy. These huge corporations with these people that are making millions upon millions upon millions that can't even give out one of their millions to spread among all their workers just to give them enough money to even make their bills. That's ridiculous. But there are some that are trying to help out, you know, all the charities. There are people that are rich, rich, rich that are trying to help out and make the world a better place.
Have you seen the Real Housewives of any of these? This is a show on Bravo.
On cable.
All these rich babes do are hold charities, charity after charity after charity. So there are some people doing good.
There are any number of very wealthy people that that do a lot with their money. There's a group called Responsible Wealth.
You
can just go to responsiblewealth.org, which includes Bill Gates' father.
Right.
And isn't the
Baskin Robbins kid in that? Not a kid anymore, the heir.
Yeah, one of them.
John Robbins, I think.
John Robbins. There's the guy from Ben and Jerry's. There's all these foundations. But what doesn't? Pardon me.
Need to be more.
Yeah. But it's not that. It's about how do we socially structure the distribution of income so we don't have this enormous concentration of wealth at the top where people can make decisions that affect everyone else below them. So if they screw up, we wind up in a depression or a recession. Also, that people work their butts off and wind up making $18,000, $20,000 a year, where other people are hiring, you know, Rod Stewart to play at their son's bar mitzvah. I mean, that's insane. I mean, there was a book a few years ago called Everything I Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And, what it is, you don't bring candy unless you have enough to share with everyone. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about some communism, socialism thing. I'm talking about a model within capitalism where that we don't have the kind of economic insecurity that even in the best of times hits people so badly, is that people have to worry about health care. They have to worry about what kind of things they can get for their kids, that schools are improperly funded. At the same time, there's so much impacted wealth, and that impacted wealth begins to affect both the economic and political structure of this country in a totally undemocratic way. So, your turn.
Well, you were really on a roll there, yeah. So Peter, I don't know that I could actually pick up from there, but we could also ask her what her Obama comment was.
Yeah, what was the Obama comment?
The Obama comment was that, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, he's been in the office for 100 days, and what has he done in whatever, 5 months. You know how much... You guys were kind of saying how much crap he has to go through. I don't even think we're going to start seeing actual changes, real changes, for at the least a year.
I agree.
I mean,
could be.
There's no way that he's going to be able to change all this stuff, and we're going to see automatic, you know. Our society is so... where they need everything here now.
What have you done for me lately? What have you done for me today?
This stuff has to actually take time to change. He can't just say, hey, boom, we're doing this now. He's got to convince two different sets of, 50 people or so to in each set. So, 100 people, Congress and representatives or whatever?
Well, one thing that's already happened, Jennifer, is that this whole 10 big banks have said they're going to repay the federal aid that's sustained them through the crisis. They're giving back $68.3 billion.
Where did they get it?
I don't know. How do they always get their money?
They
probably screwed somebody in some other area of things. All right, Jennifer, thanks for bringing up those issues. But yeah, they've now out from under the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, and so they're off on their own again, just like they always were. All right, let's take a break. It'll give me a chance to go get some hot water on my throat in the form of tea or coffee.
Okay.
All right, Peter Werby and Jillian Jordan, 313-298-WRI.
313-298-9743.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Hey, it's Meltdown from the Rift. Join me Wednesday night from 8 till 10 for the biggest bike night in St. Clair County, only at the Angry Bull Steakhouse and Sports Bar. Party outside all summer long, every Wednesday night starting at 6 with live bands, biker buffet, $6 buckets of beer, a burnout pit, bonfire, and no cousin. Wednesday bike nights with the Rift at the Angry Bull Steakhouse and Sports Bar on Lapeer and Wadhams in Kimball. Go check them out online at angrybullsportsbar.com.
Here's what else I don't get about hospitals. The airlines won't let you on the plane without scanning your boarding pass to verify you're the right passenger on the right flight. But a typical hospital administers more than 1,000 patient medications a day. Why can't they scan your medications before they give them to you? Now somebody does. The DMC. This is Mike Duggan announcing that the Detroit Medical Center is now the first and only Michigan hospital system with 100% medication scanning. In all DMC hospitals, our nurses bring barcode scanners to your bedside, linked to your doctor's computerized orders. They scan your patient wristband, then scan the medication. So the computer verifies that it's the right patient, right medication, and right dose every time to safeguard patients from human mistakes. So if you want a hospital with wooded walking trails or a day spa, go to the other guys. Just don't expect the latest in patient safety technology, because 100% medication scanning is only at the DMC.
Do you realize just how many people are seeking relief from stress? The simplicity of relaxation in spas and resorts has become a commodity. And for those professionally trained in the techniques of massage therapy, demand is a waiting supply.
Those who attend the Stauffenberger Health and Wellness Institute in Livonia receive the education necessary to be competitive in the field. Hands-on training by qualified professionals is essential for your success. Call the Stauffenberger Health and Wellness Institute today at 734-779-0730 to begin a career that really makes a difference, not only for you, but those you serve. Classes begin July 6th. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. A fulfilling career in massage therapy begins with that one call to Stauffenberger Institute. 734-779-0730. At Stauffenberger, how well you perform depends on how well you were trained.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. And Jalene Jordan is with me. This is our final segment, which is my voice going to hold out?
It is. It is.
Yeah, wow.
You've got one of those kind of springtime allergy things going on, I think.
I think it's a cold. Yeah. Tonight at 1 a.m. or this morning, Jonathan Marks, author of Why I Am Not a Scientist, he discusses creationism, scientific fraud, and modern scientific racism. Also, Daniel Pinchbeck talking about the Mayan prediction of 2012. What's all gonna, maybe that was like 1984. Remember, everybody thought that was going to be the year. Let's see, up to 2,000 cyclists are putting buttock to saddle for rides in towns and cities around
the... You mean buttock?
Buttock. What did I say?
Buttock, like something you fish off. Yeah. I didn't know what you were saying.
Or bollocks, too, right?
Or, okay.
Okay. Remember the Sex Pistols album? What was it? Never mind the bollocks here, the Sex Pistols.
Right.
Well, let's start over again. Up to 2,000 cyclists are putting buttock against, why isn't buttocks against saddle for rides in towns and cities around the UK organized by the World Naked Bike Ride Group. So thousands of cyclists have ridden through towns. This was yesterday, Sunday. Largest naked cycle is scheduled for London, with organizers expecting 1,000 nude or near-nude riders to set off from Hyde Park. And there are rides from 140 destinations from Adelaide to Zaragoza. Adelaide is in Australia, and Zaragoza is in Spain. How's that for...
I trust you.
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. But let's see, what's it all about?
I think I trust you.
Yeah, right, right. They're doing it, it's, what the hell, oh yeah, here. They're doing it to celebrate cycling in the human body. The ride demonstrates the vulnerability of cyclists on the road and is a protest against oil dependency. It demonstrates the vulnerability of cyclists on the road. Well, that's for sure, but... Yeah. That makes you more vulnerable, right?
I would think so.
Yeah, yeah, it makes me a little nervous. Right. Okay, let's go. Let's do all phone calls. We'll go right ahead.
Crank
here.
It out.
Here's
Peter.
Dan and Dan's in Grosse Pointe. Dan, hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I wanted to talk to you about your guys' comment about the rich and how they're pretty much the cause of all our economic problems.
Yeah.
And I've been listening to you guys and a lot of other people, like in the left wing media, which. Obviously, you guys don't think it exists, but saying
well,
that the car...
Well, we know it exists. It's just on a much smaller scale.
Where have you been listening? I'm just curious.
Like I saw Bill Maher talking.
Okay.
Saying that the problem is greed, and that's been the entire problem with our capitalist system, and that's what fueled this. And I think blaming the credit crisis on greed is like blaming a... plane crash on gravity. It's a part of our system, and it's there, and it's used as motivation. What caused this was actually government intervention when Alan Greenspan lowered the Treasury interest rates to 1%. So to say that caused it and now we need more of it to fix it, I don't think the government's going to be able to predict the economy more than anyone else.
Well, I'll tell you. You know, assigning it to greed, which is an emotion or a personality trait that we all think of as being a negative one, is not really what it's all about. The system is structured in a way because of the relaxation of the regulations that were, you know, part of the Reaganomics that allowed the free market, as it was called, which actually wasn't free in the slightest, but it was the freedom for these unregulated corporations and financial institutions to essentially do anything they wanted and create these enormous houses of cards that finally collapsed. I mean, the Federal Reserve, in order to manipulate the monetary system. I mean, without it, things would be even worse. I mean, people talk about we got to abolish the Federal Reserve. Go ahead, abolish it. I don't care. Or make it a government agency instead of a semi-private one. But I got to tell you, Dan, you're just peddling, you know, the worn out Reaganomics that got us into this in the first place, and no one's buying it. I mean, maybe they do out in Gross Point, but everywhere else, we know that we've seen the results of it. It's a ruined economy, and it's because of the policies that you're advocating.
So are you saying socialism is a superior economic policy to capitalism?
Well, I mean, no one's talking about real socialism, but when we talk about socializing costs, like I assume they do in Gross Point, you don't have a private police or private, park system or a private fire department, that costs are socialized. Yeah, like what I say, that the kind of system that they have in particularly the northern tier countries in Europe, where the government actually manages wealth to the extent that that people don't live in the kind of disparity of wealth and abject poverty, where there's not millions of homeless and people on the streets that even though they work can't afford homes and can't afford to eat anywhere outside of food pantries. Yeah, I think that'd be a hell of a good idea. Why don't you? I mean, maybe. I think people in Gross Point get fearful that some of that wealth is going to come out of their pockets.
Okay, first of all, to insinuate just because someone lives in Gross Point means that they believe they're above everyone else or even richer than anyone else is ridiculous.
Okay, I don't think you were saying that, Peter.
Yes, I was.
You were?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, then.
My house could be listed on the market right now for, $200,000. And 5 years ago, you couldn't find a house anywhere for $200,000.
Now, listen, I have a number of friends that live in Gross Point that are actually labor activists and quite radical. So, yeah, I don't mean everybody that lives in Gross Point is a snobby, wealthy, buffy, tennis-playing
right, because there's kind of a cutoff at a certain point, too, right?
Yeah, but go ahead.
Well, all I'm saying is, even the communities that were once, like Gross Point, it was once labeled as one of those high upper echelons.
Right.
The whole system is being dragged down by this. It's not, you can see it most visually in the lower level, but it's definitely not just that. I think everyone is feeling it. To say that anyone is even immune from it is ridiculous. But
I got to tell you, I grew up in a neighborhood just like Gross Point, throwing a little Birmingham and some Bloomfield Hills. That's where I was raised. And I went back to visit a few months ago. Everything is A-okay in their world, believe you me.
Yeah, you go out to maybe the center of gravity of capitalist excess has shifted. I mean, you go out to West Bloomfield and all that, everything,
it's hunky-dory. I mean, listen, my sister lives in this neighborhood now and, is in that whole world that we're talking about. Now, she had to back off a little bit this year, Peter.
What happened?
She can only go on 2 cruises.
Oh, man.
I know.
You're right. You are right, Dan. They are hurting.
Poor sister.
They are hurting. And I've heard a couple times that they're keeping a car an extra year.
Oh, gee. Yeah.
Keeping that Lexus, another.
I know. Yeah, she had to buy her son a brand new car, but it couldn't be a Mercedes.
We feel your pain, Dan. All right. Thank you. Unfair as usual. I get these people. I appreciate immensely those of you who send me these positive emails. But they always say how fair I am and how open-minded I am.
Well, you mostly are.
I claim to be neither.
I know, but you're when it comes to talk show hosts, you're pretty nice. You have your moments.
Well,
and I like those the best.
I mean, I don't know what fair is. I mean, that probably wasn't fair. What I did to Dan, just saying we feel your pain and hanging up on him, right? But it's radio. I'll tell you.
Dan's not going to be able to sleep for the rest of the night, Peter. You should feel terrible.
I do. when people say something about Rush Limbaugh, they say, oh, he's just an entertainer.
Yeah, whatever. Well, okay, yeah,
so are we.
So are we.
We're entertainers.
Yeah, with real facts.
We're rock and roll DJs that got loose.
By day.
Yeah. You go to my website. You want to see how we really are rock and roll DJs, and you'll understand why I can't say it exactly.
When you go there, you'll see.
You'll see. It's Peter Werbe, which is Werbe.com. Go down the left side. Where else of the site? Pardon me.
You're on a roll tonight.
I am. Here is Pamela. Pamela is in Waterford. Hi, Pamela. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to shift the conversation a little bit to our state budget problems for Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Just for a quick second.
No, I mean, I'm just saying it's so bad.
And I got a paper in the mail Saturday talking about the things they're cutting off for us for medical. Do you know we are no longer allowed dentist service, vision of the podiatrist, hearing aids? We're on disability. They're talking about budget issues. And my question is, when are they going to collect the money that's owed to the state of Michigan through Friend of the Court? Not owed to me. Money that's owed to the state. I have just one idiot in the system that owes $100,000 to the state of Michigan.
That's your ex?
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
and if they would actually get collecting on these people, maybe we wouldn't have a deficit and people like me wouldn't be losing more and more and more.
And it's absolutely terrible. See, one of the things, one of the constraints on the Michigan budget, it has to be a balanced budget. So it's got to come out of somewhere. But the idea that they're taking it from the neediest and the people that are the least able to fare for themselves is just absolutely horrible.
Yeah, I'm worried about what's going to happen to my food stamps. In another month or two, are we going to start cutting those too?
Well, I'll tell you, a friend of mine is the director of the Michigan Department of Human Resources, who I've interviewed on this show any number of times and a lot of different things he's done. And I got to get with him. I mean, if this is happening, well, I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say if this is happening. I've got to get with him and say, what is happening? How can this be done? I mean, if this is happening, it's breaking his heart, I'll tell you. I mean, he was trying to expand the services of the Michigan Department of Human Resources and get as many people that are eligible, for instance, for food stamps to be able to actually get them, because there's great numbers of people who have an eligibility. And I think part of his strategy was to almost overwhelm the system. To say, look, the level of poverty in Michigan is at such a level that we can't handle it here, and this is becoming the case. All right, Pamela, I'm going to move on quickly, but I will look into that and see what's going on. This is just absolutely terrible.
Yeah, sure.
All right, we're going to go through the calls a little quicker because we're running out of time. Here is John in Detroit. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I'd love to talk all night, but I'll try to keep it. This is John from Detroit, and I was hoping I was going to follow Dan from Grosse Pointe because I've lived on the border of Grosse Pointe all my life, and it's a true joke what goes on in Grosse Pointe and the thinking, and the thinking of a lot of the suburbs. But you know, here's the thing. Let's turn off the television and start thinking. Let's stop blaming everybody and actually cause this country to become great again. Let's stop arguing. The thing of it is that the Democrats fight the Republicans, the Republicans fight the Democrats, but the people don't run the country anymore. In fact, the people just sit there and they watch Survivor and Fear Factor and all these other mindless shows, and they don't get involved in actually making a difference.
Well, I agree. I agree 100%. In fact, John, I don't know, did you hear me earlier talking about these events that are going to be going on downtown Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday?
No, I cut it in about 40 minutes ago or so.
Do you have internet access?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. I don't know if you caught the spelling of my name, but if you go to my site, Peter Werbe, Werbe.com, it's the first thing up there. It's a people's summit to present alternative fight-back programs for economic recovery. And there's all sorts of things going on, depending on what your individual preference is. There's like big demonstrations, there's workshops, there's speeches, and it's attempting to bring together people to start figuring out how do we want to solve the crisis, because as you're saying correctly, right now we're just depending on the elites. Are they going to serve us well? Well, this group of elites is sure serving us a 100 times better than the last band of cutthroats that were in for 8 years. But as you said, it's still elite control, and that's what we've got to end. That's what we've got to alter if we want to make the country what you said and what we all want and what we want our own lives to be. All right, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Check that out. Here's Nick in Milford. Nick, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Going good. I'm wondering, let me see, whether I'll still have a voice for the next 12 minutes. But
we're doing well. Go ahead, Nick. I'll speak for you.
All right, great. Thanks. Good to hear. So I'm actually surprised no one else talked about the whole war on drugs thing, but I guess it'll please me to be the first. You know, we're talking about how people are, like, making drugs legal to carry, at least in possession terms. And how well did that work out in Mexico?
Oh, yeah, as with what's going on right now?
Well,
with drug wars.
You're saying, how do I think it would
How
go?
Well...
How well has it gone? Like, they said that they're allowing people to carry, like, a modicum of heroin or cocaine or...
Oh, are they? Actually, I didn't even know that.
I didn't know that either.
I don't think...
Maybe I'm full of it. It won't be the first time.
No, but anyways, let's say it's true. I mean, these huge narco-traficantes, the big cartels are, about importing drugs into the United States because the price is artificially raised because of the suppression of great amounts of it. In other words, it's not a true supply and demand. It's a controlled supply, so the demand and the demand is high, so the price goes way up. I mean, that's simple economics. So, so their individual drug laws of possession or whatever really don't affect what's happening here.
Right. So, well, I mean, like, has that really worked out well for them, though? Would that really translate to us at all?
I'll check it out. In fact, Jalene may be checking it out right now.
Oh, I'm busy at it.
She's busy at it. All right, let her take a look, and we'll see whether Mexico has reformed drug laws. Thank you. Let's see. Here is JR in Royal Oak. JR, hi. You're on the air. It's PW with you. And JJ.
How you doing, Peter and Jalene? I've been a long-time listener.
Welcome.
Hi. Great. Thank you.
I'd like to ask you about Social Security. I've been in Social Security for 29 years here, and it's so hard to deal with them. Now I've got a medical problem, and it's tough to... over a year and a half, going on 2 years to deal with Social Security, and I just don't understand why it's so tough to deal with them, and I'd like to ask your opinion about what you think about that, or even if you could help with it, or just any information you could give me.
You know what? I actually don't know that much about it, particularly for you. You're talking about Social Security disability?
Yes, exactly.
Don't know, but I do know that you're not alone, of course, and that's.
How about a lawyer? Is there any kind of?
I'm dealing with a lawyer now, but.
That's what I would say, because a friend of mine who tried for like 5 or 6 years to get that, he finally did. With the help of a lawyer.
Well, and it's shameful that that so many people that need disability and deserve it have to go to through so many hoops.
Those levels. Yeah, because, I mean, it's not like they have the money to pay for the lawyer to begin with, right?
Yeah, and
well, I could understand if you didn't work all your life and maybe you worked 2 years out of your life and you're 60, 50, 60 years old or whatever, and then you're trying to get disability from them and they're giving you a hard time. But if you paid into it your whole life, I just don't understand why it's so hard to deal with them.
Well, it is a bureaucracy, and that is unfortunate. I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't have much more to say than what...
The B word.
What?
Bureaucracy.
Oh, bureaucracy.
Yeah.
All right. Best I can say, and sorry I can't give you any more advice, is best of luck on it. It's just a shame that people have to go through that.
Yeah, get some legal help.
Right. All right. Here is, Kenneth in Southfield. Kenneth, hi. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. How you doing, Peter and Jalene?
Great. Thank you.
What I wanted to say, Peter, I wanted to talk about the economy and how a lot of the companies are taking, looking for cheap labor and everything.
Yep.
And it just baffles me when they want to, look for the cheap labor and not pay fair wages. Don't they realize who's going to buy their products? I mean, people won't be able to afford their products if you don't pay a fair wage.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean, companies have historically tried to get out of paying good wages. Beginning in the 1950s, that companies began leaving Detroit, going to the American South in order to pay non-union wages. Pardon me. I know I can finish this program. I got about 4 minutes left.
Yeah, you can do it.
And because that's the only real big cost that they can control. And the less they pay people, the more that they have for themselves. One of the things they did over the years, of course, say 40 years ago when a Cadillac was about $5,000. Well, in that amount of time, a Cadillac now is what? How much? $30,000,
$35,000, $40,000?
I don't know. So, well, up there like that. So it's gone up 7-8 times, but wages in many ways haven't gone up that time. So what you do is you get you maybe even get a smaller market, but you get people that can afford it. But I know what you're saying, Kenneth, but they're always in it for the short run. All right, thank you very much. And let's see, here is Alex in Royal Oak. Go ahead, Alex, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I just had a quick comment going back to the Walmart issue.
Sure.
I know that's quite a while ago, but I think it's kind of disappointing to see Sam Walton kind of just, you know, will all his money and stuff to his kids. Like, he's a guy who built a business from nothing, basically, and then he gives it to his kids who haven't done really a thing to deserve it. I'd kind of like to have seen a Carnegie action on that, where he didn't give his kids anything and basically gave it all back to the community to kind of give a chance to those who helped him build his business, basically, by buying from him.
It would have been nice if he had done something like that, but I'll tell you what, if my dad gave all of his money away, I'd be pissed.
Well,
give me some. I've got a great daughter.
Look at it this way. I mean, he could have given each of his kids $100 million.
Thank you. And still had.
They never would have had to work, and then he would have taken, I don't know what, it's $70 billion and put it in things that could have really helped the world and helped the community. But, these guys have no conscience.
I like that idea better.
I do. Thank you, Alex.
I have no loyalties to the Walton children, believe me, or the family, or the corporation.
All right. Maurice from Detroit, you are our last caller. Maurice.
Oh, what a way to end it. Maurice.
Watch your
language. How you doing, Peter Julie?
You watch that language tonight.
Give me your opinion about Mike Cox running for governor. I say he's unqualified, unfit because of the poll investigation he did on the party at the Lumberland Mansion.
Well, let me bring, this is Mike Cox, who is
Attorney General.
The Attorney General. He's going to run for governor, and he say he buried this investigation about what happened to the Manoogian Mansion.
Is that over?
No. Well, we haven't done
that. Because we know the strippers were there. We know. We're not stupid.
Yeah. And what do you think about Kilpatrick now got this multi-million dollar mansion down there in Houston? Or Dallas. Which is it?
In Dallas.
Dallas. I've never heard him at a loss for words. All right. Thank you, Maurice.
What happened?
I don't know.
All right. So our last caller of the show, Peter, it's been a great one.
Yeah, it was. Even with this damn cold. Is this going to go away?
It is going to go away. All the confidence.
All right, so we are done. Thank you so much, but do not go away because I've got a couple of great interviews following this commercial break. Jillian Jordan, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you to Roger for answering the phones. And
Roger,
we want to thank Al Beck, who does overnights here at this very radio station, WRF, for coming in and saving us.
That's right. All right, we'll talk next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Unsurpassed inventory, knowledgeable staff, same or next day service, and competitive pricing are the chassis on which Glendale Auto Supply has built their business. With over 20,000 parts in stock, they'll probably have the part you need. If not, they can usually get it within 24 hours. Behind their counters, you'll find ASE certified professionals who take pride in providing service and expertise you just can't get anywhere else.
Spring's here. It's time to wash away winter grime. Hi, I'm Will from Glendale Livonia. We carry everything to get your car shining, featuring a complete line
line of Meguiar's professional car care products, wash, wax, shine, tire spray, bug degon, and Armor All Protectant. There's even special spring pricing on Meguiar's tire brushes, cleaning mitts, and drying towels.
Your first choice for auto parts is Glendale Auto Supply. Check their website, glendaleautosupply.com, for the location nearest you. Farmington, Livonia, Southfield, Walled Lake, Lake Orion, and Dearborn Heights.
Come to Glendale Auto Parts, are what we're for.
Back now while supplies last.
Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, the host of the radio show Hire It Done. Now that it's spring, it's time to fix up your home. Whether it's a new roof, siding, windows, paint, concrete drive, gutters, deck, landscaping, or any other project you've been itching to get done, we can help make it happen. So tune in this weekend to Hire It Done, or go to hireitdone.com and let my pre-screened contractors compete for your business. Don't put that project off any longer. Visit hireitdone.com today. Get your project started by Metro Detroit's most professional contractors.
Hey, what are you in for?
I wasn't paying attention driving through a work zone.
Really?
Yeah, I caused a crash, and the person I hit died.
There's a new law in town. If you injure or kill anyone in a road construction work zone, you could face a fine and jail time. Your future shouldn't be locked up this way.
I've been here for 15 years, too.
You have the key to safety, your head. Use it. Drive smart in road construction work zones, or your future could be behind bars. This message sponsored by the Michigan Department of Transportation and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
The raw power of a Harley-Davidson could be yours. Motor City Harley-Davidson's Harley Fest 2009. Presented by 101, WRIF, and Miller Lite. Win a sweet 2009 Harley-Davidson XL 1200 Nightster. Courtesy of Motor City Harley-Davidson. Get on the rip to win a key to these sweet wheels. July 11th at Hill Creek Ranch. Plus, details on how you can win a key in person. Feel the rush. Harley Fest 2009. Presented by Motor City Harley-Davidson. Feel the freedom of the number one dealer in Farmington Hills. Also from Miller Lite. Good call. And your Harley Fest Station. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF. WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, Peter Werby, here with you. You know, every society has a cultural model through which everything in our lives interacts, politics and customs and everything, literally everything. Some of them are homogeneous. People agree, or mostly everybody agrees. Some societies have great conflicts about social models and cultural models and even scientific models. Sometimes the rebels against the dominant models are suppressed. But ultimately, it's a lens, a matrix through which we view the world that becomes ultimately, very, very important to us. I have a book here that's extraordinarily interesting and gets, in many ways, to a lot of what may be sort of a confusing introduction. If not, my guest, I'm sure, will clear it all up. He's Jonathan Marks, and he's a professor of anthropology at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. He's also the author of, I love the title, of a book, What It Means to Be 98% Chimpanzee, Apes, People, and Their Genes. His brand new book, published by the University of California, is Why I Am Not a Scientist, has the subtitle of Anthropology and Modern Knowledge. And we reach Jonathan Marks at his office in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be with you.
Well, you hooked me into it right in the preface, and maybe you could explain to people the meaning of your title, Why I Am Not a Scientist.
Well, it has sort of several layers of meaning, like a lot of anthropologists like to work with sort of multiple meanings. There is a sense, of course, in which I'm indisputably within the scientific community. I'm a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, Section H Anthropology. But there's also an ambiguity about anthropology itself. Being an anthropologist, the sort of fault lines within academia run right through anthropology. Half of anthropologists sort of claim to be humanists and do humanistic sorts of research, and half of them claim to be scientists and do scientistic kinds of research. There is this ambiguity that often if you teach the elementary course in human evolution at your university, if it originates in the anthropology department and the university may or may not recognize anthropology as a science per se, students may not even get science credit for what is manifestly a scientific topic. So there are these ambiguities about just what counts as science and what an anthropologist feels being in academia and teaching about science and being part of it and sometimes not being part of it. What I'm really interested in is how to look at the dominant means of knowledge production in our society, which is, of course, science, and looking at it through the lens of anthropology. After all, what anthropologists do is to study different cultural systems, and science is our cultural system.
Well, and I want to get in a little more to the origins or the play on, sense, play on words of the title, too, but let me just say that it could be that to someone struggling with day-to-day matters here, they say, boy, that sounds abstract, and the word sometimes, interestingly, academia or academic denotes ivory tower. It's not concerned with everyday comings and goings that we're experiencing and very difficult at times. I mean, isn't just ivory tower stuff. Ultimately, this does have an impact on how we view the world and through what structures we all operate.
Well, I think we all acknowledge science is a very important component in our lives. We look to scientists to help us out of energy crises and environmental crises and things like that. But at the same time, we also recognize that you can't necessarily believe everything every scientist says. And there are reasons for that. There are various conflicts of interests and things like that. I think we all pick and choose what science we want to believe and what science we don't want to believe, what science we want to ignore. And we have various criteria for doing so, and that's one of the things I'm interested in exploring. What are the circumstances under which you can't believe everything you hear from a scientist?
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us again about, or not again, but expand on the why I'm not a Christian. I'm sorry, I gave it away, didn't I? I gave it away. Why I'm Not a Scientist, which is the name of the Jonathan Marks book, and I'm interviewing Professor Marks right now, but tell them the origins and what my slip refers to.
Well, I'm certainly very flattered to be confused with Bertrand Russell, but Bertrand Russell, the philosopher, mathematician, wrote a famous essay in the 1920s, Why I'm Not a Christian. What Russell was arguing is that he wanted to separate himself doctrinally from some things in Christianity, some of the most fundamental religious beliefs. But on the other hand, if you think sort of globally, you can't define yourself out of Christian history and culture. I mean, Bertrand Russell, was matriculated at Trinity College, Cambridge. I mean, you can't take him out of Christian literature and theology and the cultural history within which he was born and worked. He was very much part of it and yet, had some doctrinal issues. And I think in that sense, you can't take me personally out of science. But at the same time, I want to call attention to some of the things that I have some problems with in science, of which the top of the list is the perseverance of scientific racism and the tolerance that we occasionally still find within the scientific community for something that should have been totally purged from science ages ago, scientific racism.
Well, actually, I'm shocked that it still exists, because maybe you could just quickly give a little background of how racism found a scientific root in the 19th century, and that we're still dragging along this baggage 150 years later or so is pretty shocking and a scandal. And give us some information on that.
Well, one of the things, and again, this is also the 200th anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin and the 150th anniversary of the publication of The Origin of Species, which Darwin was clever enough to have published in his 50th year. So we get this sort of double anniversary in 2009. And I think one of the things that we need to think about as we reflect back on evolution is that when Darwin published The Origin of Species and when Huxley a few years later wrote the first real book on human evolution, Man's Place in Nature, there was no fossil record connecting humans to the apes. You could look at the similarity in their bodily form and bodily structure, Which, of course, Huxley did. Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, okay, humans resemble apes, but, you know, you can see the shape of a camel in a cloud, as Hamlet did, and Italy resembles a boot, you know, so there doesn't necessarily have to be a genealogical connection there.
Sure.
But that first generation of evolutionary theorists was faced with the problem of trying to convince the reading public that humans are genealogically connected to the apes without there being a historical fossil record to document that transition. And what they did was to sort of make a deal that hasn't been remarked upon, I think, enough, and that is they made the rhetorical argument. Obviously, they're arguing against traditionalists, creationists. And they said, well, how do we convince you that humans are linked to apes? Well, we don't really need a fossil record. If you simply look at Europeans and you look at apes, the connecting links between Europeans and the apes are the non-European races. And what they ended up doing was essentially scoring rhetorical points against the creationists while sacrificing the full humanity of non-European peoples in that service. And to an extent, we've been paying off that debt for the last, 150 years. And it's something that we really do need to pay more attention to. One of the other things I discuss in the book is creationism. And one of the points that I like to make is that I think scientific racism from within the scientific community, to the extent that it still exists and is still tolerated, although of course at a much sort of different and lower kind of level, but to the extent that it's still there in science, it poses a bigger threat to science than anti-scientific creationism does from external to science. And the reason is simply that scientific racism from within the scientific community erodes the credibility of science.
Well, I don't know why. I can't imagine. I didn't know this previously. But tell us, this is the second time I'm using this word, the shocking subtitle of Charles Darwin's Origin of the Species.
Oh, the preservation of favored races and the struggle for existence.
Favored races. That's the white guys.
Well, yes and no. He was using races. I mean, in fact, humans don't even really appear in The Origin of Species. He's talking about races of animals and races of plants in the generic sense of stocks or breeds. So
it's not shocking then.
I should read it. There is some interesting stuff there. On the one hand, Darwin is not particularly well known, but Darwin only makes one small mention of the human species on the next to last page of The Origin of Species. He says, light will be thrown on the origins of man and his history. And that's the only reference to the human species in the first edition of The Origin of Species. And a bit later, he was sufficiently emboldened to modify that sentence to read, much light will be thrown on the origins of man and his history. And that remained the only reference to humans